Gun control? It's the best thing you can do for crooks and gangsters. I want you to have nothing. If I'm a bad guy, I'm always gonna have a gun.
Sammy Gravano, convicted mob assassin.
And all guns should be Glocks. All Glocks should be 9mm and Model 19. A generation 4 or 3. All guns should be Glocks. All Glocks should be.
Hi, folks, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of your Handgun World podcast, episode 325, to be exact, a practical show done by a practical guy. That's me. This week, I'm going to talk about de-escalation. I mentioned a little bit about de-escalation in the last couple weeks, and recently a listener called in a voicemail, which I'm going to let you hear a little bit later in this episode, but he made a really good point. I and many other podcasters and bloggers and trainers and people out there, we make a big deal about the final weapon, which is using a gun, basically, to defend yourself. We don't spend enough time, in my opinion, teaching people how to do things like de-escalate conflicts before they happen. And that's kind of an art. It's very much an art. So I'm going to talk about that in this podcast coming up a little bit later. Let me go over a couple of voicemails. Let me let you listen to a couple of voicemails that were called in before Alex in St. Louis called me about de-escalation. Mexican Joe, who listens to this podcast and my other show, today's survival show, he and his buddy Dave, a couple of great guys, they just recently took our class in April up in Dallas. But Joe has some pretty good insights here that he wanted to share with us about a couple of things I said in a couple of recent episodes. So let me let you hear his voicemails one at a time, and then I will respond.
Hey, Bob, Joe here. I wanted to leave you a little message about, I believe it was podcast 322, about corrections. I'm sorry for the noise. You can probably hear I'm in my mobile studio. On open carry that's coming in January 2016, a little more clarification there. I don't like that. I'm kind of caught in the middle on what's going on there. I think the police should be able to card you just to kind of clarify in the beginning. If there is abuse, then that gives us room to pull back from that. I do believe you have to be qualified in some way to carry a firearm. I know not everybody's going to agree with that, but to me, carrying a firearm is the same thing to me as driving a vehicle. Now, I know that driving a vehicle is not covered under the Constitution like carrying a firearm is, but I think you should be qualified at some point to carry a firearm. I see a lot of people who have firearms, and having them and carrying them are two different things. I see people on the range that are not qualified to use a firearm and need instruction. So carrying it concealed or open and knowing the law is very important. And that's one of the reasons why I am kind of okay with this. You have to be able to, you can be carded. I don't have a problem with the carding right off the bat until it becomes an issue. I kind of put it more like towards driving. I have a lot of friends who are cops. I regularly have breakfast with a bunch of cops. And they said they're just going to go with what the law says. And they're not going to card people just because they're carrying. I mean, I've had cops and state troopers, you know, that I'm sitting there talking to. And, you know, now that, you know, the profiling rule is gone, I'll get out of my vehicle and I'll put my gun on and I'll go to walk inside to have breakfast. And, you know, whether I profiled or whether they've noticed it or whatever, you know, they've noticed it in some way, you know, and they're like, hey, you know, Joe, what are you carrying? Oh, today I'm carrying this. I'm like, hey, how do you like that? We get into a conversation about it. It's no big deal. You know, but then again, they don't even card me then because, you know, they know that I have one. They've never seen it. So they're taking it on faith, but it's not a big deal. So I think a lot of cops aren't going to test it. They're just going to use it when they need to. If there's a question in doubt, maybe somebody looks really underage or whatever the scenario, I think we need to afford the latitude to police officers. Something else is, should a scenario arise to where you do have to pull your weapon, as a police officer pulls back up, I would feel much more comfortable reholstering my weapon, whether it be concealed or not, reholstering it, than sitting it on the ground. Because when I set it on the ground, I lose control of the weapon. Now, if the police officer wants to come up and take my weapon from me at that point during the investigation, I don't really have a problem with that. It just proves that I'm the good guy. So that's just a little more in depth on why I don't have a problem with open carry and the police officer being able to check it. Now, I am probably an 80-20 guy on open carry versus concealed. I'm 80% concealed, but I do see the 20% times when, and it's happened to me before, you know, recently, where I've been in a store or I've gotten out of the truck and I walk inside and I've got shorts and a tank top on, and, you know, somebody walk up and go, "Dude, your gun's exposed." I'm like, "Oh, you know, damn, sorry about that." And you're like, "No big deal. It's just, you know, shirt's right up. So now your gun printing or profiling is no longer a crime as long as it's not intentional." Well, now your gun being exposed or not concealed will no longer be a crime. You know, and I'd like other people to call in and let us know how many people have had their weapon exposed and not know it. That's a crime. Even if you have a concealed weapon until January 1st. And then it won't be a crime anymore. So it's really just giving us baby steps to get closer and closer to what our end goal is. And I'll take what I can get, and I'm trying to work with the police on this to make sure that we just make this kind of a nice, easy transition. I don't want to jump into anything and cause a bunch of problems. And I also know that there are people out there who are going to take advantage of the open carry and that they couldn't be carded and carry when they shouldn't be. So that's kind of my gist on it. I got people on both sides that agree and disagree. But that's my take on it. Tell me what's yours, and we'll go from there. Have a good day, and thanks for everything you do, Bob. Bye.
Okay, thank you, Joe. First of all, let me say, I really believe that Texas made a big step in the right direction recently. I said that before, but I'm going to say it again. This resulted in an expansion of our gun rights. And I hate to just keep focusing on Texas, because a lot of states are doing that. Kansas just recently went to open carry. And it seems like the Second Amendment Foundation and the NRA are really making some excellent progress. So please, let me take this opportunity to remind you to support those organizations and also your local state chapters. Most of them have rifle associations and gun rights associations on the state level, and you can become members of those as well. So regarding this licensed open carry, Joe has a right to his opinion, and I wanted you to hear it, and he wanted you to hear it, otherwise he wouldn't have called that voicemail in. And everybody basically has their own opinion and idea of what happens. You know, some people have similar opinions. Here, again, let me just go ahead and say this. You know, other people have said in states where there is licensed open carry that it hasn't been a problem. But again, as I mentioned recently, I want to really avoid using the argument that it hasn't been a problem, because it also hasn't been done much either. In other words, you know, open carrying as a percentage of the people that are out there. So, let me just go ahead and say this. I think we have moved to a situation where I believe that Texas and many other states pretty soon are going to see extreme loosening of their gun rights restrictions. And I think that's a good thing. I really think that we are winning. I think the anti-gunners are losing the battle overall. They may have won a couple here and there, like in Colorado recently with the magazine restrictions, but overall, as a whole, they are losing. It doesn't mean, though, that we take our foot off the gas pedal. It means that we keep our foot on the gas pedal and keep the pressure on every aspect that we can to keep our gun rights. I'm still just a little bit uncomfortable with the notion of being able to be carded, as Joe put it. And that's a good way to put it. That's good terminology. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with being carded just because I'm open carrying. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope we see little to no incidents of that happening in this state. I just don't really care for that. I'm kind of, my opinion is, if you're going to have the ability to do something, let's have it. But I've also warned against being an absolutist. I don't like being an absolutist. I define an absolutist as one who says, well, we got to have everything we want or nothing at all. Have you ever encountered people like that? I have. Yeah, I think that's kind of frustrating. And I also think it's very counterproductive. Don't be an absolutist. Don't think, well, you have to have everything or nothing. Because by doing that, you could easily end up with nothing. So I just hope we don't have a lot of those incidents. If we do, I will bet you that the legislature is going to be taking this issue up again in 2 years when the Texas legislature meets again. So I think it's good timing. And let's just see how all this plays out. But I am looking forward to January 1st, 2016. Joe, good voicemail. Thanks for calling that in. Let's listen to his next one.
Hey, Bob. Joe here again. I've got another comment on something you had said where you had listened to one of Ben's podcasts about always carry. When I'm on my property and when I'm off, I always carry when I'm off the property. I carry about 90% of the time when I'm on the property, just as a matter of practice, still working with different holsters. And being on the property, I don't necessarily have to conceal them, but it gives me a good chance to break them in. I'm riding on a tractor, or gardening, or whatever it is I'm doing, I've got a gun on me. Also, I tend to not be a real popular person with some people due to kind of what I do for a living. But here a while back, I actually had to pull my gun and use it. And it was a scenario we had an issue with a neighbor dog attacking our dog and some of our livestock, and we kind of rectified it, or so we thought. So I'm just kind of walking through the yard one day, and Amazon hollers out that, you know, that the rogue dog is in the yard and is going after some of our livestock. Well, she goes running in the house to grab a gun, and by the time she got out with a gun, I had taken care of the situation because I had a gun on my hip. You know, I just kind of ran up, and, you know, the dog went around the side of the house hunting my dog. And, you know, I just kind of moseyed around, found the dog, popped it twice. It ran off, and, you know, the neighbors are a little upset with me, but, you know, the neighbors need to keep their dog on their property. I have since had a deputy come out and talk to me about it. Actually, I shot another one of their dogs, and I'm a dog person, so that's kind of hard, you know, for me to deal with. But I explained to the deputy the way the state code reads. You know, we've got dogs that are attacking our livestock and you know, and our animals, and he agreed we're perfectly within our rights. And out in the county, there's not a leash law, but there's not really much of a lead law either. So this goes back to your comment on always carry your gun. Yes, always, even at home. You can be in the house, and, you know, if you've got pants that'll support it, I would carry it. All right. Well, thank you much, Bob. Appreciate it. And hope to see you soon at the next training.
Okay. By the way, I forgot to mention in the last segment, as I've mentioned to you guys many times before, I'm probably not going to open carry. What I mentioned, or what I was talking about, was I would hate to see other people who are open carrying get carded just because they are open carrying, and hopefully that doesn't happen. Okay. Regarding always carrying, Joe brings up a great point. You know, folks, the quickest, most accessible, and most effective way to have your handgun ready is to have it on your person. Off-body carry is nowhere near as quick and as effective. Leaving it in the house while you're out on the property, you know, not much good with that. I don't see how can you get in your house fast enough and get to your gun if you need it. That's, I think, kind of unrealistic that you're going to be afforded that kind of time. So when I say always carry, and Joe reminded me of this, always keep it on your person. I don't care if it's a little pocket 380. I don't care if it's a tiny little single stack 9mm. Or maybe it's a Glock 17. Maybe it's a M&P 45. Maybe it's a full-size 1911 or a full-size H&K or what have you. But whatever it is, it always needs to be on your body. I'm not a big fan of off-body carry. The only time that I ever off-body carry is when I'm driving, and actually I do both. I normally have a small pistol in the appendix carry position when I'm driving, and I have a larger pistol between the seat and the console of my vehicle. And of course, the larger pistol is going to be my go-to gun. But if I have to get out of my car for some reason real quickly because there's some kind of a threat that I can't take care of, now I have a pistol that is on me, whether it's in my pocket, whether it's appendix carry, whether it's behind the hip, strong side carry. You always have to be thinking about these scenarios, folks, but I'm here to tell you that if you study defensive gun uses, you are most likely going to find most of the time that a successful DGU is because the person had their gun on their body in a proper holster and easily accessible within seconds. I mean, you know, 1 second, 1.5, maybe 2 seconds maximum. But good voicemail, Joe. Thanks a lot. All right, quick break, and then we'll get to the main topic.
Whenever you see big city mayors campaigning for gun control, rows of uneasy-looking police officers are forced to stand behind the mayors. The reason our police friends are uneasy is they don't buy into the mayor's political scam. The president of the Black Police Caucus said his members believe there should be no gun rationing, and nearly 100% of their membership thinks criminals are able to obtain guns through illegal means. Likewise, 94% of the National Association of the Chiefs of Police believe that citizens should be able to purchase firearms for self-defense and sporting purposes. Maybe this is why billionaire New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg called the 32,000-member Fraternal Order of Police a fringe group, because unlike Michael, cops know who the good guys are, namely you, not Bloomberg. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, this segment is from the Handgun World mobile studio, using my iPhone because I forgot my recorder. Driving home from the range, I was just there with Ben Branham. We just filmed some really cool shotgun stuff for the Shooters Club. So if you're a member of the Shooters Club, or you're going to become a member of our website, our membership website, where there's really cool, about 36 videos on there right now, 37 once we get this shotgun video posted, you're going to see how to pattern your shotgun at different ranges. You're going to see some good information on how to load your shotgun. We did different distances, 10 yards, 15 yards, different types of shotguns, different types of loads, buckshot, slugs, even zeroing your shotgun with slugs. So that should be available shortly. You might want to check for you that are Shooters Club members. And by the way, folks, everybody who's a Shooters Club member, I hope you hear this, going to be changing the password shortly, so you'll get an email. So for $8 a month or $75 a year, you can support the work that Ben and I do on our podcasts and everything else by becoming a member of our Shooters Club and watching some very educational videos. So this segment, I want to talk about my Glock 43 since I've now had a chance to shoot it. Man, it's been sitting in my safe all the way up until now, and I haven't had a chance to shoot it, but I just shot about 125 rounds through it. I like the way it shoots. It's very accurate. Yeah, the trigger is a bit stiff, but it'll loosen up after I give it a 1,000-round trigger job. I didn't think recoil was so bad with both magazines, the pinky extension and the flush-fitting magazine. I've heard a lot of people say, oh, man, this thing recoils a lot. Yeah, it didn't for me, and I even shot some pretty hot-loaded defensive rounds. They were Federal HST, 124 grain plus P, and I shot some Corbon DPX through it. I really like the Corbon DPX round because it's very effective and very low recoil. That's one thing I got to say about that. At least for defensive ammo, it's very low recoil. I got a problem with my Glock 43, though, that I really don't like. And I don't know what it is about these little mini single-stack Glocks, but when I first get them, they've got issues. My 42 is flawless now, but the 43... I got a problem with the magazine sticking. Only with the flush-fitting magazine, and I thought I was the problem. I thought, okay, Bob, you're doing something wrong. So I handed the pistol to Ben Branham. I said, hey, Ben, here's a magazine full of ammo loaded into the Glock 43, and when he loaded it in, it did the same thing to him. It was sticking. And unless I insert the magazine just right, it doesn't even go all the way into the grip. So there's something wrong there, and I think I know what it is. I think it's the mag catch. It's hanging up on the mag catch as I'm inserting the magazine for some reason, because I can see little marks on the top of the magazine and things. So that was kind of irritating. It was flawless. I didn't have any other malfunctions with it except for just that magazine issue. But I don't like that. You know, I'm a little bit disappointed. I'm kind of upset with Glock because, hey, it's a brand new pistol. It had never been used. It's brand spanking new. Why should I have an issue with a brand new Glock like that? You know, I had the same issues. Well, not the same issues. Excuse me. I had issues with my Glock 42 when I first bought it, and after a trip back to Glock, and basically it seems like all they did was what they called update the internals and gave me four brand new magazines. I don't know quite what updating the internals means. I don't know if they just, you know, smoothed some stuff out, filed it or whatever, but my Glock 42, once it came back from Glock with four brand new magazines, it's been awesome, and that thing shoots phenomenally. I like the Glock 42. Yeah, I know it's only a 380. With good ammo, hey, a 380 can be quite effective, folks, with good ammo. I know a lot of you poo-poo the 380. Oh, you know, it's got to be a 940 or 45, or it's not going to be effective. Really? Well, you know what? There have been a lot of DGUs where people have used a 380 to successfully defend themselves. And as you know, as it's always said, folks, if you put the rounds where they're supposed to go, they're going to be effective. Would you agree? It's about where you hit the bad guy and actually making hits. So the Glock 43 is probably going to go back to Glock. It's an easy fix. Yeah, I could take it apart. I could fart around with it. You know, I could file down the mag catch or figure out some kind of a little modification to the magazine to make it smoother and to, you know, make sure that it doesn't hang up when I'm inserting it. But here's my question. Why should I do that? I'm sure Glock's going to pay for it. I'm sure I'm going to call them up, and they're probably going to send me a prepaid shipping tag, and I'm going to ship that sucker to them on their dime, and they're going to fix up my Glock 43 and send it back to me. And they should do that. And Glock's customer service, I've had great experience with them, excellent experience with them, so they'll make it right. But I am a little bit irritated. I've been reading some people, I've been reading on the internet that some people are having this issue. And I don't know why Glock is doing that, because I got to tell you right now, my Smith & Wesson M&P shield, my 9mm shield, still, in my opinion, blows the socks off of this Glock 43. That's my opinion right now, is the 9mm shield without thumb safety blows the socks off the Glock 43 right now. I can't seem to shoot that any better. It isn't any smoother shooting. It really isn't much easier to carry. And even compared to my Car PM9, which is significantly smaller and a little bit lighter, right now, my PM9 and my M&P Shield, I'm still liking better than my Glock 43. And you know I'm a big Glock fan, so a little disappointed in that one. But I'll probably have better reports for you once I ship it off. I'll probably call them today as soon as I get back home, get a little bit of work done. And I'll get it back from Glock, go to the range some more, make sure those magazines are inserting like they're supposed to, and then I'll probably have a very good report for you. All right, that's it. Quick break. I'll be right back.
You know what makes me furious? Politicians who pass laws keeping me from owning or carrying a handgun. Tens of thousands of women have been raped, beaten, and killed in this country. Virtually all of them had two things in common. They weren't armed, and the police weren't around when they were attacked. I don't want to be raped or maimed or murdered, so I carry a handgun, even though that bothers some people. I don't care. Nobody tells me I can't defend myself, especially some politician living in a safe neighborhood who has bodyguards you and I pay for. If you ask me, these politicians are on the criminal side. Handguns are small, easy to carry and use, and very effective for self-defense. That's why the police carry them. Get smart, sisters. Criminals can get all the guns and knives they want. How does taking away our guns make us safer? Look, you may think you'll never be attacked by a criminal, but I'll bet that's what all those other women thought.
Hey, Bob. It's Alex in St. Louis again. Just listening to your Gun Culture 2.0, I thought it was great. You made a really good point in there about how we should only use our firearms in the case that everything else doesn't work. You know, de-escalation and some other items, you know, just finding a way to get away. If you can't get away, if there's communication skills that I need to develop that I haven't really thought about working on to de-escalate. I was thinking an idea for a podcast might be de-escalation tactics or practices that I can, you know, nonverbal and verbal communication that would help me possibly get out of the situation well upstream of having to go to a weapon. You know, it seems like the gun culture, and I'm all over it, I love it, I'm a big supporter, we're all about, oh, get magazines, we gotta get ammo, let's get all that gun would not print as well, all of that. It seems like we're focused so much on the end weapon. The best weapon could be the de-escalation. So maybe an upcoming podcast on that. Thanks again for all you do, man. Take care.
Okay, now for the main topic. There's a great article that was written back in, I think it was 2008, by Dr. Drew Guest. And he wrote it in Martial Arts Magazine. And it starts with a story, a true story that I want to share with you. And this whole topic here is about de-escalation, as I promised. So here's the story. There was a 14-year-old kid that was sitting outside of a barber shop waiting to get his hair cut, but the barber was out to lunch. Shortly after, I guess he got there, three thugs walked by the kid, and one of them makes a smart remark about the kid's clothing. So the kid got offended by the remark, and he stands up and he challenges them to say it to his face. So these thugs turn around, approach the kid, and they repeat the insulting remark. So the kid gets in their face and tells them the next insult's going to be their last. Well, his statement didn't really work. It didn't turn off the bad guys. So they make the insult one more time, and the whole thing escalates and turns into a fist fight. About that time, one of the thugs pulls out a switchblade, which the kid, who had been trained in martial arts for a few years, quickly kicks the knife out of the guy's hand. Surprised by this young kid's fighting abilities, the thugs hesitate, and at that point the barber, who was returning from lunch, saw what was going on, breaks up the fight, and he threatened to call the police. And that's a true story. Now, a violent confrontation usually starts with one person verbally attacking the other. And they usually, you know, hurl insults or threats or accusations and things like that. And the second person responds with a greater verbal attack. Wrong. See, that right there is escalation. It's not de-escalating. If you respond with a verbal attack greater than what your aggressor is using, wrong move. And it goes back and forth until one of the combatants is either pushes the other or fists start flying. And hopefully in our case, it's not gunshots that start flying. So what if you're in a situation like that, but you're not trained in martial arts like the teenager was, and you're not able to get the switchblade out of the bad guy's hand. Well, first of all, you shouldn't let it get to that point in the first place. Most of the time, I would say probably 95% of the time, with proper skills, you can de-escalate the situation, as I did a few weeks ago when a guy approached me in my front yard after I pulled into my driveway. He approached me from my blind side and was yelling and screaming at me because I was driving too fast in the neighborhood. De-escalation works. And I'll tell you what, folks, you know, the old adage that you will do what you're trained to do, you know, I've been trained in some de-escalation tactics, and it worked. It definitely worked using some of the de-escalation tactics that I've learned in the past. So this article, I'm going to link to it in the show notes, but you really need to read the whole thing because he talks about active listening as a communication technique and things like that. But there were 5 points that really stood out in this article in Martial Arts Magazine back in 2008. There were 5 things that really took, that really stood out for me. And basically he calls them the 5 don'ts of de-escalation. In other words, don't do these because you're not going to be successful in trying to de-escalate a confrontation if you do these. And if you think of the acronym TACOS, T-A-C-O-S, think of that acronym TACOS. It stands for threaten, argue, challenge, order, and shame. Don't threaten, argue, challenge, order, or shame your aggressor. So in other words, if you want to de-escalate the situation, he says, here's what you don't do. You don't, first of all, threaten the aggressor. And, you know, back in that story, we kind of heard about that, didn't we? You know, where the kid says, this is going to be your last time that you're going to say this to me if you keep this up. Well, that's a threat. That's a threat. Don't argue. Don't argue or contradict the person who is being the aggressor. Had I argued with the guy that I, you know, was not driving too fast in my neighborhood, you know, I'm not going to win that argument, and that's just going to escalate it because he wants to win the argument. I just said, okay, I'm sorry, okay, all right, I'm sorry. So basically that was kind of agreeing with him and, you know, telling him I'm sorry, even if I really wasn't doing it. Don't challenge the aggressor either. You know, what this kid did is he challenged them by getting in their face. That's kind of that's a challenging gesture. That's, you know, anybody's going to pretty much take offense to that. Even if someone is not coming after you aggressively, they're still going to take exception to you getting in their face. And that's an escalation move. That's not going to de-escalate anything. And then this kid basically orders the aggressors to stop calling him names, and he issues them an ultimatum. That's another thing you don't want to do, is you don't want to issue ultimatums. Most people don't, you know, they don't respond positively to ultimatums. And whether somebody is being aggressive towards you or not, nobody really likes to have an ultimatum, or they don't like to be faced with an ultimatum. And then he shamed them by calling them names in retaliation. See, and I think this one, this number 5, don't shame them by calling them names, or, you know, retaliating, or even if they're not calling you names, whatever it is that they're doing, if they're verbally trying to get aggressive and you start retaliating, I think that'll probably escalate something faster than anything else. I think it'll escalate it faster than a threat, faster than arguing, challenging, or ordering them to do anything, is if you shame them. Okay? And, you know, if we think about this whole thing, you know, the kid also ordered the aggressors to stop calling him names. And that was the ultimatum. And if you put the ultimatum together with retaliation, that's when I think you've got a really bad combination. So remember, TACOS, T-A-C-O-S, don't threaten, T for threaten, don't argue, A for argue, don't challenge, C for challenge, don't order or issue an ultimatum, so O is order, and don't shame. That's the S in that. I think that's going to go a long way. And this is such a complex subject that I'm going to kind of stop right here. I want you to think about these just for a little while. And I want you to ponder these and think about situations that maybe you've been in that kind of escalated out of control. Remember, we as gun carriers, we want to be responsible and we want to be cool, calm, and collected. And that's our main goal, is to not have to use these weapons. Let's let these things, you know, stay in our holsters and come out of our holsters when we're at the range and having fun and going to training class and plinking around and going to, you know, going to combative training classes and competition matches and things like that. You know, let's be prepared to use them if we have to. You know, don't think that I'm a pacifist. I'm not going to say that you should, you know, never use it. It's a last resort, a last resort. If your life is in danger, and you can articulate that you are in either, that your life is in danger or you're in danger of grave bodily harm or the life of a loved one, and you can articulate that, well, by all means. Why is it that you go through the trouble of carrying a gun and possibly getting trained with it so that it can save your life one day if you need to? But if at all possible, de-escalate. Okay, I got more to say on this, but I'm going to save it probably for next week's episode. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and just remind you, join our Shooters Club if you like the work that Ben and I do. We have a great Shooters Club with, as I mentioned earlier, with about 35, 36 videos on it. And don't forget about our classes. We're filling up fast in Northern Ohio, up in the Canton, Ohio area. We're filling up fast up in Seattle at Fort Discovery with Glenn Tate and the team. And we just opened up October 10th, Beyond Concealed Carry in San Antonio. If some of you want to get prepared for the November advanced class, where Chaz Murray from the Road Gunner podcast is coming down to teach with us, and so is Tracy Thronberg from Austin, Texas. That's going to be a great class. So if you want to get ready for that, you don't really have any other training under your belt, come see us in San Antonio October 10th at Lone Star Handgun. And thanks for supporting me, folks. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Catch you next week. Goodbye.
A generation, four or three. All guns should be Glocks. All Glocks should. Should be Glocks. All Glocks should.